Retired Congressman Kika de la Garza was born in Mercedes, Texas, September 1927. Growing up in Mission, Texas, as a 17-year-old, de la Garza joined the United States Navy in 1944. Discharged in 1946, he returned to Mission to complete high school and then attend junior college in nearby Edinburgh. Subsequently, Kika joined the Army as an artillery officer, serving as a second lieutenant in the Korean conflict. By 1952, Kika had earned a law degree and shortly thereafter entered politics when he was elected to the Texas House of Representatives, serving as the sole Hispanic member of the House until fellow Mexican-American Oscar Laurel was elected to represent Laredo in 1957. De la Garza left a legacy at the State House as a passionate advocate of environmental protections, including wetland preservation and establishment of wildlife corridors, along with early childhood education, creating state-sponsored preschools. Following six consecutive terms at the State House in Austin, De la Garza was elected as a Democrat to the United States House of Representatives from the 15th District. His congressional career spanned 32 years from 1965 through 1997, serving the 89th through the 104th congressional sessions. In 1976, De la Garza became a founding member of the Hispanic Congressional Caucus, where he served as chairman from 1989 to 1991. De la Garza also became the first Hispanic since 1917 to chair a standing committee in the House when he was elected chairman of the Committee on Agriculture, serving from 1981 to 1994. De la Garza's accomplishments as chairman of the Ag Committee are plentiful, including disaster assistance acts, conservation, commodity and nutrition programs, initiatives to provide ag land environmental protections, and federal crop insurance reforms. A staunch civil rights supporter, De la Garza ramrodded bills to protect wetlands, institution of pesticide laws, improving cross-border relations with Mexico, and trade initiatives such as NAFTA. Close to home in the Rio Grande Valley in Texas, De la Garza is revered as being instrumental in securing federal fundings for the Valley Wildlife Refuges that have become world-renowned destinations for naturalists and avid birdwatchers. I had the absolute honor and pleasure to visit with Kika De la Garza and his wife Lucille in their McAllen, Texas home. I'm Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a fascinating conversation with Kika De la Garza and his wife Lucille as they share recollections of Kika's incredible life journey, including friendships with LBJ, Nixon, Carter, Clinton, and so much more. Kika De la Garza.
Kika, can we go back in time in your life? As a young guy, how did you start out? What did you do when you got out of high school?
Before I got out of school, I went in the Navy. At 17, I joined the Navy. And then when I got out, I came back to finish high school.
What year did you go in the Navy?
Oh, 1944, right before the war ended. I was in before the war ended.
And were you shipboard or?
They kept sending me from Mission to San Diego to Great Lakes, and I never could get on a ship until I got out of the Navy and stayed in the reserve. Then I went on board ship.
And what type of craft were you on?
USS Macon, the destroyer.
And do you remember where you toured to?
Mostly in the Atlantic and the Caribbean, all the way to Panama and the Panama Canal and at Guantanamo, but we didn't dock at Guantanamo. We only anchored offshore.
Eventually, you did 4 years and then came back, or two?
No, it was almost 3 years.
So then you went back to high school.
Right. I came back to finish my senior year, Mission High School.
At what time and when and how did politics enter your life and why?
Oh, my family was involved in politics all the time, so I grew up in a political family. I was involved in politics as a young man. I remember when they couldn't find someone to go speak at the little ranches, rallies. They'd invite me to come, so I started making political speeches when I was still in college.
And your father, what did he do in politics?
My father was a precinct chairman for about 40 years.
In the Democrat Party?
In the Democratic Party, of course. We didn't allow Republicans in at that time.
There are a few around now, aren't there?
There's a few.
Okay, so when and how and why did you run for your first office?
Well, since my family was involved in politics all the time, and they started a new district. We only had one representative in Austin, and they added two more. So I ran for one of those seats and won.
A state representative?
Yeah, in the state legislature, state representative.
And what year was that?
Oh, beyond I can remember, 1952.
At that point in time, what were the issues that you were most passionate about?
Girls.
Political issues.
Politically. My father and my whole family was involved in politics, and we were friends with county and state, the representative. But I always wanted to be a representative in the legislature. So when they opened this new district, the party, the politicians elected an elderly gentleman who couldn't make speeches. So that gave me a chance to get in and... Plus, I was in the Army, and I campaigned. My first campaign was in uniform as a second lieutenant, and we won the election, and I got me a wife out of it.
And how did you two meet?
Oh, our families knew each other forever. So I always had my eye on her.
Was that a battle to win that one?
No, it wasn't. It finally worked out.
Tell us about when you were a representative, when you started out and you were going, what sort of issues were of a concern here in Mission and the area?
The major issues were taxes, number one, and what was it? Oh, representation for the border area. So I spent a lot of time my first year in the legislature working for South Texas and the border area.
How many years did you stay in the state legislature?
14, and went from there to Congress.
So that must have been quite a shift for you, for a local boy down here in South Texas, all of a sudden showing up in Washington, D.C.
Well, it was. It was a very good, awesome experience. But I had a good campaign manager.
What was your competition? Who was running against you? Do you remember?
For Washington was two, one local, Lindsay Rodriguez, and one downriver, Gene McCullough. I had two opponents and stayed in a runoff with one and won the runoff.
How long did you stay in Washington? How long were you representative?
Oh, I hate to say it, 32 years. Longer than I had planned to stay there.
Looking back, were there any issues or most memorable or closest to your heart?
For our area, it was basically agriculture, and I started on the agriculture committee. Went from the last man on the committee all the way to chairman of the committee, but it took 32 years.
So you were there in Washington when LBJ was president, weren't you?
I had campaigned for LBJ when he first ran, and so we knew each other. I could say we were friends. And so when I was elected to Washington, he was in the Senate. And then,
so in 64, you both ran at the same time then, together?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I ran for Congress, and he ran for the Senate. For president, that's right.
Did you get to visit with LBJ and talk one-on-one, ever go to dinner with him? Or?
Oh, he was very close to the Texas delegation, so I was able to visit his office and visit with him one-on-one. So it was very, our prior campaign, when I helped in the campaign, helped when I got to Congress and he was there as our senator. We were already, I can say, friends, not intimate friends, but friends knowing each other.
Tell me what you feel or felt about LBJ as a politician, as a person. Were you really proud of him? Do you think that he did a good and the best job he could?
Oh, yeah. From the beginning, he was a good politician as far as running for political office. And then in Washington, he went up in the Senate. He worked his way up to majority leader in the Senate. But one thing was that he never forgot who helped him in the beginning. And another thing I liked about him was he never looked down at you. Like I remember a gentleman, I used to shine shoes when I was a young boy, and I would go shine this. He was a very prominent lawyer, and I would go shine his shoes, and he'd look down at me all the time. And I remember that Lyndon Johnson never looked down at you. He always looked straight at you.
In a sense, he never really lost his common roots from when he was a teacher then.
No, I don't think he did because, well, he worked his way up to leader in the Senate and never forgot those who helped him in the beginning. And although we were weren't at the same level, he still looked straight at your eye, and you could talk to him one-on-one.
Did you ever go and visit Lady Bird and LBJ at his ranch?
Yes, we did. We went several times.
Did you know that his little Air Force One is still at the ranch and his old Lincoln is still there in the garage?
I didn't know that the Air Force One is still
there. It's the little Air Force One. He had the prop one, I think.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, I landed there a couple of times at this landing strip, and we rode around. I don't know, were you with me? We went around in his car in the ranch. No.
Think back about when LBJ was president and some of the legislation that he was ramrodded and responsible for that you think is most important to the 20th century.
Oh, my gosh. Medicare. Oh, yeah. Well, that was Medicaid and Medicare. Medicare was, I guess, the number one piece of legislation that he supported. And I was thinking this morning, I had gone to see our doctor in Mission, and as he walked out with me to the waiting area and had a lady with him, and he told the lady, "You have to come when I tell you. You understand? You have to come when I tell you." And he told me, he said, "Tell her she has to come when I tell her." So I asked the lady, "Why didn't you come when he told you? She said, "Because I didn't have any money." That's when I started working towards voting for Medicare. Remember? Remembering that lady, "I didn't come because I didn't have any money." And I was fortunate to be in the Congress to vote for the original Medicare bill.
LBJ, during his presidency, both of you, that was a very important time in race relationships, desegregation, Deep South.
Oh, yes. Civil rights, because, well, he started teaching in Cotulla, Texas, mostly Mexican, Latin American kids. And that stayed with him through his whole presidency.
Tell us about Head Start when LBJ was behind that.
Oh, yes. That actually, the fact was that the Medicare and Head Start was Lady Bird was the behind-the-scene mover for Head Start. And I helped because we had little neighborhood classrooms, I guess you could call them. And that stayed with me until I was able to do something in government, like Medicare, when I was in Congress. But it began way back in my neighborhood when I was younger.
When you left Congress, what year was that?
1997. When I went to Congress, as was when LBJ, and I stayed through LBJ, through Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford and Ronald Reagan. I served with Ronald Reagan. Oh, and Jimmy Carter.
George Bush.
Father Bush, not the son.
So let's go back to the Nixon years. That was a very interesting time in American political history, wasn't it? What did you think of Richard Nixon?
Well, I would consider him a friend because very interesting. Anytime we were at the White House, he'd get me off to the side to speak in Spanish with me.
Oh, really?
To practice his Spanish. And so I would say that we were friends aside from president and congressman, but he'd get me off to the side to practice Spanish.
Were you saddened by the end of his presidency?
I don't know that I was saddened, but since I had a good friendly relation with him, I hated to see him go. And his end came at a very opportune time in his life and in my life.
How about Ronald Reagan?
Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, tell us about what you think of Ronald Reagan in those days.
Well, we had a friendly relationship from president to congressman, and any time that I'd be at the White House, he'd always get me off on the side. And Nixon already did that, also did that to practice his Spanish on me. Mm-hmm. He'd get me off to the side to speak in Spanish. And Ronald Reagan was, his first question all the time was, and how are things in the Rio Grande Valley?
I bet he loved saying that.
Yeah, that was always his first question.
Can you think of anything else relative to his administration that is memorable in your mind?
One that I'm proud of to say at this time that we had a friendly relationship, not only as congressman and president, but as friends. And I think what I remember the most was that he always had notes, I guess from his original movie experience, and he'd always look down at his notes when he was speaking to you. He still speak eye to eye, but he'd look down at the notes. I remember that the most.
Always an actor there, his cue card.
Right.
Going forward, Jimmy Carter is probably one of the more maligned presidents that a lot of people feel did not get the due respect and honor that he deserves as a president. Your thoughts on Jimmy Carter?
Jimmy Carter was a very nice gentleman, very kind, quiet, unassuming type. But he always looked you in the eye and would speak to you as a normal person, one-on-one. But I think history has not been kind to him, because he was a good president, because he worked with the House and the Senate. He worked the one-on-one very, very, very well, always treating you as an equal, not looking out at you. I think that was what impressed me the most about him.
Would you say that same thing applied to Bill Clinton? I've heard from many people that he did exactly what you're saying, that he would always look you in the eye and give you 100% of his attention for however short that time might be.
That he did was he always made you feel, as Jimmy Carter, that he was speaking to you as a friend, not president to congressman, but as on an equal basis. I think that was one of his qualities, was that he could level with you and make you feel that you were on a one-on-one basis, not president to congressman.
On a real human level.
Very human, right.
As you look back as a retired congressman and you watch the antics and the goings-on in Congress and the Senate today, what are your feelings? What do you think about what's going on?
Well, I hate to say it. Most of the time I say, what in the world are those guys doing?
Or not doing.
Or not doing. But it's vastly different from my service there to now. Plus, the issues have changed, and the Congress, House and Senate, have changed. The people who have gone up there now, of course, have to be elected in their own areas, but it doesn't feel the same. Looking from outside back, I don't feel that there's the same camaraderie, the same eye-to-eye type.
Well, and the other thing that I've heard you talk about consistently today is a bipartisan camaraderie, an ability to cross the aisle and talk to one another in a civil way and work together. We don't see that anymore, do we?
Yeah, that's unfortunate, but that's when I was on the Agriculture Committee, I started at the bottom all the way to chairman, and the Republican ranking member, Ed Madigan from Illinois, and I got to be very good friends, so much so that I went to his district and campaigned in one of his campaigns. A good Democrat says, what are you doing here campaigning for a Republican? I said, because he's my friend.
You don't see that much anymore.
No, you don't see that anymore. And you don't see the relationship anymore between House members and Senate. There's a divide that seems to be unbridgeable now.
Do you think it's salvageable? Do you think maybe it's generational, that there might be another generation coming along that will have that greater good and be able to stand tall and act tall?
Unfortunately, the way it looks now, I don't think so. I think the politics are such that the division is there, and the working across the aisle is not as available as it was when I was there. Like I said before, my ranking Republican, Ed Madigan, and I were close friends, and we were able to work along. And I could work across the aisle very easily, and that isn't done anymore.
Seems to me that it should be able to be bridgeable and salvageable. And maybe it's finding a new generation who are willing to stand up and speak from their heart. And
well, I would hope so, but the way things appear to be at this time, it would be very difficult because the division is, there's a dividing line that seems to be unbridgeable.
But you do see some glimmers. Bobby Jindal, once in a while, will speak up and speak out in a way that I find most impressive, having the guts to speak his mind.
Well, yeah, he seems to be doing real well, and I think he plays my kind of politics. When you work with everyone, you reach across, and you don't let the political divide separate you at all.
Or muffle you or prevent you from speaking now.
That's right. It's like being at home, friend to friend. I don't think we have that anymore. I know with our representatives, the ones that I know of, they're not what I would hope them to be like I was.
You think they're trapped to a point, though?
Basically, that might be it, that the division is unbridgeable.
Would you mind talking a little bit about your thoughts about President Barack Obama and what you think of him and his administration?
I think he's done a good job, and although I didn't serve with him, but he's no Lyndon Johnson, but I think that he works well both sides of the aisle, And he's not really a Southerner, but for a Midwesterner to bridge the gap, I think he's done well in that respect.
If you could talk to a young guy like you that's just now graduating from high school with political aspirations, what would you want? Could you tell him? What can you pass on as all the sum total of what you learned?
First thing I would tell them would be listen to the people, stay close to the people, and as Lyndon Johnson would say, feel the flesh. Don't think because you're being elected to Congress that you're any different or that you're higher. You're one of them. You represent them. And that's what I would advise young members starting off, that don't put your high hat on, but go and be one of the group, one of the people.
Do you mind talking state politics for a moment? Rick Perry and what's going on in Austin today.
Well, I think Rick Perry has done a good job. And although I didn't serve with him, but he considers me a friend. Plus, he likes my wife. He always kisses my wife.
Well, that's because she's so cute.
But I think he's done a good job.
When he served in Congress, we had a lot of friends on the other side of the aisle. In fact, I think more than on our side. But you didn't see it that way. We were all just work together and friends, and we'd go out to dinner and go to parties. And like he said, Richard Nixon always sort of took to him. And one year, a high school group from Rio Grande City, which is west of here, went to Washington, and he took them to the White House. So President Nixon came over to the Rose Garden and visited with them, and they invited him to come to Rio Grande City. So one day, President Nixon called him to meet him in Laredo because he was going to be in Laredo. So he did, and he flew with him on Air Force One with the president to Rio Grande City, and it happened to be his birthday. So when the president arrived to the school and addressed the students, he said, by the way, is there a piano around here? And they rushed and got a piano out to the gym where they were meeting, and he played Happy Birthday for him.
The president.
On the piano, and that picture made it around the world because he received letters later from people saying, we saw your picture with the president, we saw you, and some of them would say, you traitor.
Oh.
From Germany, telling me that it was in a German paper, the president playing the piano for me, my happy birthday.
Before we go, Kika, any legacy that you could pass on to a new generation would be priceless.
I guess the main thing is be yourself and don't think because you're elected to Congress that you're any different or higher level, and just be yourself. And the most important thing is don't forget where you came from, who your people are, and don't feel that because you're there, you're a higher up, or you're just keep in touch with the people, shake the hand, feel the flesh.
Pretty basic stuff, huh?
Right.
In those days, you had to drive because there weren't that many airports. And he would arrive at the rallies or the meetings by himself, or I'd go with him. And some of the members nowadays, they arrive with an entourage and cameramen and all of that. And it just, when I see that, it's not the same. You know, you're just you and what you can do. And that's one thing that they admired about him, that he was always by himself and going around to all the businesses down the street and visiting them, what do you need, things like that. And also now, I wouldn't say everywhere we go, but a lot of places we go, people stop him and say, you don't remember, but you helped me when I was in the service, or you helped me with my Social Security, or you did that. And it seems like everywhere we go out, we see someone that that says that, and he says that's what made it all worth it, that, you know, the people remembered, and you were able to help. And it's not like that anymore. So, but I think it was worth all the everything that you mm-hmm. had to go through, campaigning, being away from home, away from the children, because mm-hmm. our children grew up all the time that he was gone. So I was mother and father.
Were you in Bethesda or whereabouts?
We lived in McLean, Virginia.
Oh, okay.
And we ended there by chance. And it was a very nice area. We loved it. I miss the snow.
I bet you do.
I really miss the seasons, though, because each season was very defined, and here it's hot mm-hmm. or hotter. I miss that, and then we have a lot of good friends that still keep in touch, or they come by and visit or call, and I think that's what enriched our lives, was meeting people and making friends, and at the same time, helping people back home, which is what you were there for. We have pictures galore that everyone, you know, whenever they honor him, they want a picture of this, picture of that. So I've been cataloging all the pictures. I'd be safe in saying we have, like, I'd say over 3,000 of the pictures from all the years.
Now you have to digitize them.
Yes,
yeah.
And all the countries that we visited. And I've always said I was thankful that he was in the Agriculture Committee, because when we visited other countries, we'd be out in the country with and how they lived and their education, the schools. So I always said, I'm glad you weren't in any other committee but this one, because this is the one where you get to feel
the people. Yeah, mm-hmm. No kidding.
Yes,
yeah.
So that helped a lot. That was mm-hmm. that was very interesting. And I even learned a lot about agriculture.
Yeah, if you're on some business committee, you would have been stuck in corporate headquarters.
The banking committee, yeah. you would have been in just in the banks and things like that. But I enjoyed being in the agriculture, mm-hmm. that he was in the agriculture committee. And then he was fortunate to have been elected chairman, which was the last thing from our minds. He was chairman, I think, 14 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Little did he know. Huh?
Yeah, and when he started at the bottom, but I guess that's the way, there's nowhere else to go but up. So it was very memorable.
Mm-hmm.
Very memorable.
Well, very touching.
And in May, God willing, we'll have been married 60 years.
Wonderful. Congratulations.
They say in Spanish, que aguante. Holding on. I'm thinking about the dividing line now. I don't know if we have two congressmen. I don't know if they have the relationship across the aisle that I had or that we had. As a matter of fact, we've stayed in touch. The last time we were in Washington, we had dinner with Pat Roberts, who's now a senator from Kansas. And we stayed friends, although he was on the Republican side. I was on the Democratic side. But our friendship transcended the political part, so much so that we stay in touch as much as we can.
Is he retired now?
No, he's still active senator.
So you learned quicker than he did.
Younger.
Well, we're just about out of time. Before we go, any parting thoughts, Lucille?
I was glad that he was named to the Agriculture Committee, because when we had the opportunity to travel to other countries, we would visit with the people and out in the country and hear about their problems or the way they raise their crops or cattle or whatever, and compare it to South Texas. And so I was glad that he was named to that committee, because you got the feel of the people of the countries of the country that you visited. And I always thought, I'm glad it wasn't the banking committee or something mm-hmm. like that, because we'd just spend all the time in the boardrooms and not get to really see or know the people. And of course, I think what also helped a lot was our speaking Spanish, because we were always invited to the different embassies for dinners, to the Spanish-speaking embassies, and they considered us one of theirs, and we were able to meet very interesting people. And also, when we visited Spanish-speaking countries, where we had the advantage of being able to speak the language and understand what they were saying, many a times Kika would translate for the other members. So I always said that speaking Spanish helped us a lot.
Lucille, thank you so much. What a pleasure.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Kika de la Garza, former United States Representative from Mission, Texas, Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it, and I don't have a chance too much to get back and talk about our service in Washington, but I appreciate you coming, and I hope this helps.
Oh, yes, it does, and I consider it a true honor and a pleasure to be in your company, and I thank you for that so much.
As I say in some of my speeches, I dine with kings and dance with queens, but this was my greatest moment, talking to you.
Thank you so much. All right, Kika. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Lower Rio Grande Valley in Texas.